Coming up on Golf Today, he was the leader after round one, the leader after round two, slept on the lead on Saturday, and walked away with the trophy on Sunday. How impressive is Joaquin Neiman at RIV? We'll dive into the salty numbers from the 23-year-old. And in this sport, a lot of prepared statements come across the wire. You read them, you look past them. Not the two we got on Sunday. Dustin Johnson and Bryson DeChambeau both publicly announcing their allegiance to the PGA Tour. We react to comments from a couple of U.S. Open winners. And you want Hall of Famers on a Monday? Okay, we hear you. We got you. Annika Sorenstam joins the program to talk pine needles, her plans for the year, and how fun it was competing last year at the U.S. Senior Women's Open. Eamon and I have announced we are fully committed to Golf Today. Let's go.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
And what a 4 days it was for Joaquin Neiman at the Genesis Invitational. Second youngest winner ever. First wire-to-wire winner since 1969. He was impressive to start, and he was impressive to close. Awesome to watch in Los Angeles. Look at that final leaderboard, Neiman. At 19 under par, just needed 71 on Sunday. Colin Morikawa pushed him for sure, 65 to close for world number two. Cameron Young making some noise as well. 17 under par has him in a tie for second, but that's just kind of a ball striker leaderboard, if there's such a thing. What a weekend it was in Los Angeles. Shane Bacon with Eamon Lynch. And you know what? Golf, I had to kind of step away from golf the last few weeks. I mean, I was doing some of the Olympics. I was doing some of the Big Air. You've been locked and loaded on this, and you got a chance to watch Joaquin Neiman just tear apart Riviera.
Yeah, I suppose you thought whenever you came back from the Olympics, Shane, that you were done with guys throwing things upside down and having spectacular wipeouts. But hey, I got news for you, dude.
It hasn't gone away.
No, it
that
really
has
hasn't.
Not gone away. When you watched Joaquin Neiman Thursday to start through Sunday, how impressed were you with not just the situation at hand, but his ability to continue to put the foot on the gas? Because we don't see wire-to-wire winners at Riviera much.
I imagine Lanny Watkins had a voodoo doll of Neiman on Friday night when he was
like the Dolphins
so far under par, and Lanny's 35, 36-year-old scoring record was looking in danger. But Neiman was so impressive, and this was a tournament to me that was won on Friday night because he didn't show any signs of real weakness over the weekend. There was that shaky missed birdie putt on the first hole on Sunday morning, but other than that, he seemed so steady. And, you know, guys made a charge at him. That's a pretty hefty leaderboard that he held off.
Important to play well for the first 3 days, and that's what we saw from Joaquin Neiman. We'll get into that win here in just a bit, but you mentioned it. And congrats on getting out from under the boulder that you live in. If this is news to you, rival leagues to the PGA Tour have become the talking point around the sport. Reports surfaced this past week in L.A. that 17 players had signed with the Saudi League. From that report, players talked. Oh, they talked.
As it goes to the Saudi stuff, like, I'm all for the PGA Tour. You know, I've done this. I've been a pro for 2.5 years. My entire life, I've thought about the PGA Tour. I've thought about playing against Tiger, beating his records, whatever, you know, some that might not even be breakable. But I've never had another thought of what's out there. Right, I've never thought about anything else. Like, it's always been the PGA Tour.
As it relates to the much talked about Super League, or whatever we should describe it as, you've made your position quite clear.
Not so Super League.
Elaborate, please. No, I'm just kidding. Is there any part of you that is A, tired of talking about it?
Oh, I'm so sick of it.
Okay.
This is my official, my one and only time I'll talk about this, where I am officially declare, let's say, my fealty to the PGA Tour. You know, I'm a PAC member, and I have a lot of belief in Jay Monahan and the product that they're going to give us on the future.
Hope you're buckled up for this roller coaster. On Thursday, it was Phil Mickelson making headlines with quotes from Alan Shipnuck's upcoming biography on Mickelson. These quotes were released by the Fire Pit Collective, and they were a lot. Phil Mickelson saying they're scary to get involved with. We know they killed Khashoggi and have a horrible record on human rights. They execute people over there for being gay. Knowing all this, why would I even consider it? Because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reshape how the PGA Tour operates. They've been able to get up with manipulative, coercive, strong-arm tactics because we, the players, had no recourse. As nice a guy as PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan comes across as, unless you have leverage, he won't do what's right. Phil continued, and the Saudi money has finally given us that leverage. I'm not sure I even want the SGL to succeed, but just the idea of it allowing us to get things done with the PGA Tour. And players at Riviera were asked about Phil's comments. Here's what they had to say.
Seems like a bit of a pretty, you know, egotistical statement. I don't know. I mean, it's like he's done a lot of great things for the PGA Tour. It's a big reason it is where it is. But, you know, him and others that are very adamant on that, if they're that passionate about it, go ahead. I don't think anybody's stopping them.
I don't know what Phil's doing. I know Phil's got a lot of stress in life right now. And, you know, I don't know what he's doing. You know, I know he's not speaking for me. And, you know, I actually really don't care really what he has to say about anything, because I just don't, because he doesn't speak for me. And, you know, he's had an amazing career. He obviously thinks that there's something else on the other side for him going down the line. And if he gets it, great. I mean, he's made, you know, $800 million in the tour. I don't know what could be so bad about the tour.
So all of that noise, and then things calm down for the next few days at the Genesis Invitational until Sunday, when the PGA Tour released this statement on behalf of Dustin Johnson, who'd been wildly rumored to be tied to the Saudi Golf League. Dustin Johnson saying, over the past several months, there have been a great deal of speculation about an alternative tour, which of this seemed to have included me and my future in professional golf. I feel it is now time to put such speculation to rest. I'm fully committed to the PGA Tour. I'm grateful for the opportunity to play on the best tour in the world, and for all it has provided me and my family. While there will always be areas where our tour can improve and evolve, I'm thankful for our leadership and the many sponsors who make the PGA Tour golf's premier league. And then Bryson jumping in. Man, this is a lot, Eamon Lynch. Bryson saying, while there have been a lot of speculation surrounding my support for another tour, I want to make it very clear that as long as the best players in the world are playing the PGA Tour, so will I. As of now, I am focused on getting myself healthy and competing again soon. I appreciate the support. Well, following his final round on Sunday, Rory McIlroy met with the media and gave his reaction to DJ and Bryson's statements.
I think with everything that's transpired in the last few days, I don't think it's surprising. Like, I've always reiterated that I feel like this is the best place to play golf if you're an elite professional golfer. Maybe I'm fortunate that I've been more privy to the inner workings of the tour, and I've been more involved, and you know, got quite a good relationship with the leadership team on the PGA Tour, Jay, Andy Pazder, Ross Berlin, like all those sort of guys. And every time I walk out of a meeting or walk out of any sort of interaction with them, I'm always very confident that the tour is headed in the right direction. So I was really glad to see DJ and Bryson put out those statements this week. Like, we all want to play against the best players in the world, and they're certainly two of the best players in the world, and it's nice to know that they're committed to playing here and committed to making this the best tour in the world.
What did you make of Phil's comments earlier in the week?
I don't want to kick someone while he's down, obviously, but I thought they were naive, selfish, egotistical, ignorant. A lot of words to describe that interaction he had with Shipnuck. It was just very surprising and disappointing, sad. And I'm sure he's sitting at home sort of rethinking his position and where he goes from here.
Would this end it?
Oh, this, yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, who's left? Who's left to go? I mean, there's no one. It's dead in the water, in my opinion. And, yeah, I just can't see any reason why anyone would go.
And if you haven't heard enough from the PGA Tour players, add Billy Horschel to the chorus of Phil critics. This from Will Gray on social media, courtesy of Matt Adams. A little bit idiotic, to tell you the truth. I think some of the statements he made are lies. I don't know where he got his information from. I honestly feel he's hurting his reputation and tarnishing his legacy. Billy continued on talking about the 2025 Ryder Cup, saying Phil Mickelson might not be the captain there as expected at Bethpage Black. Well, Jaime Diaz has joined us. Jaime, we'll start with you. Just what's going on here? I mean, typically on Mondays we're talking about golf tournaments and results, but this is the story around this sport.
Well, I think it's an affirmation that the best players play for things other than money. I think that's the big takeaway. This was a test, kind of a stress test of how will professional golf, the PGA Tour, hold up against the threat. And I think it held up quite well. I don't think the threat was ever that well conceived. It certainly had a lot of, you know, smoke because the money is so powerful, but it's not everything. And as a result, I think some guys got over their skis, out too far over their skis, in particular Phil Mickelson, who I think took on the role of being the spokesman and the guy who was going to carry the ball to the tour, much as he did in the Ryder Cup in 2016 when, you know, he said, you know, 2014 when he basically criticized Tom Watson and gave rise to the task force. I think he was emboldened by that success, quote unquote, because he did apologize for it later. And I think this was a similar kind of sort of hubris to kind of go forth with something that was really not particularly well-founded in fact or in the real feelings of the players, and he got caught out, and, you know, he's suffering for it.
Yeah, this was a long-running and very expensive farce that didn't have many laughs in it, mm-hmm. and I think we finally reached the point where it has collapsed, frankly, under the weight of its own filth mm-hmm. at this point. It was never anything other than what Phil inadvertently exposed it to be, because yes. no return on investment was ever possible, given the numbers being thrown around here. And I don't think it's a great sign that it took so long to get to this point. I mean, you remember Rory McIlroy was the first top player to take himself out of this mm-hmm. with unmoral grounds by saying, I don't like where the money is coming right. from. That was 718 days ago. Mm-hmm. And it's taken this point where this thing is finally collapsed. And that collapse has done some collateral damage here, not least to reputations. I mean, you had a guy like Charlie Hoffman who frankly just made himself look like an idiot a couple of weeks ago at the Waste Management. But he will get over that. The reputations of two major champions in Phil Mickelson and Greg Norman have been sundered, but this is what happens. You know, when you flirt with serial killers, it's a dangerous business.
I grew up a Phil Mickelson fan. I mean, I'm a young left-handed golfer. I remember sitting in a recruiting letter to Arizona State and getting a response that said, I haven't had a lefty on the team since Phil Mickelson. I think about the last 2 years for Phil and what he had done for his career, not just in golf, but post-golf. I mean, you think back to the 2020 PGA Championship when he got in the booth with Jim Nantz and Sir Nick Faldo, and everybody was saying, oh, my goodness, we've got golf's Tony Romo. You think about the matches and the success of the matches, and with superstars like Peyton Manning and Steph Curry and Tom Brady, Phil was the best of the group there. He was the most entertaining. He could guide the conversations the way he wanted to go. And then, of course, what happened last year at the PGA Championship, everybody in the world, you know, Phil fan or not, were rooting for Phil Mickelson to win that PGA Championship. And you think of what happened the last 9 months mm-hmm. since that win at the PGA Championship. You're hearing from peers, from players, from media members, and everybody questioning what he's doing. Jaime, what is Phil Mickelson doing?
Well, he was emboldened. He was emboldened by all that popularity and all that great power, the gift of gab, his charm, all those things. I think he felt like Teflon there for a while. And I think he had a grudge for whatever reason. He seems to have a little bit of an issue with authority figures sometimes with the PGA Tour. He didn't like being told what to do with his media rights or with certain other, you know, things about how tournaments are set up. And this was a way of getting back and showing his force. And I think he thought he had the hammer, but he did not have the hammer. You know, he had something that in the end really exposed him as not quite as smart as he would like to believe he is. He's the smartest guy in the locker room, possibly. He's not the smartest guy in the wide world of business and especially, you know, mega sports. This was big game he was taking on, and he got exposed. You know, I don't think it's the end for Phil personally, but it definitely is going to take. I wouldn't be surprised, as Billy Horschel said, that he may lose that Ryder Cup captaincy. He's going to have to pay some costs, some contrition here.
Eamon, where are we going from here? Because, I mean, if you were in an Uber that was making this many U-turns in left and right turns, you'd get out and you'd give it a one star. I mean, you've been following this as closely as anybody. Where are we going from this point, considering Dustin and Bryson and Rory and John Rahm and the list continuing on?
Well, I suppose there's a twin track of next dominoes to fall here, one of which is the Saudi League itself. What happens with it? Do they launch? Because if they do at this point, they're launching as an alternative to the Champions Tour, and no one's watching an alternative to the Champions Tour being played in the middle of the night somewhere else around the world. That's a separate issue. The consequences for Phil and potentially other players are more interesting. He spent the last few years really building a brand, as you mentioned, with his social media persona, more so than with his game. But there have to be consequences now for Mickelson, because his sponsors are all getting very nervous. They're waiting to hear what Phil says next, and that will determine the consequences for Phil, at least commercially, with his partners. I'm also interested, what are the consequences within the PGA Tour itself, because Jay Monahan made clear from the get-go that if you are aligned with an alternative tour, you will be suspended or banned. Phil, in his comments to Alan Chipnook, said that he had worked on with other players on drafting the startup agreement, operating agreement for this league. Now, I think it's ridiculous in the sense that no league was ever going to give Phil his media rights. It's not how it works. But it's possible Phil was drawing up his own to present to these guys. So Phil has acknowledged involvement to a certain point. What are the consequences for that? There are going to be a lot of people out there wondering who was paid along the way in this, who did take money, and where are the receipts? And I'm sure the PGA Tour would like to see where the receipts are, because that influences a lot of the actions that they might potentially take. And another person who knows where the receipts are the jilted, angry Saudis, who may now have a reason not to actually feel any kind of empathy towards Phil Mickelson in his current situation at all. But ultimately, it comes down to, will the PGA Tour take action against him? And I can't see how they don't, because if someone tells you they are and admits they are trying to burn down your house, you're going to want to see something from them before you have them back as a guest.
You're not
going
to ask them to start the fire in the fireplace, that's for sure. I keep going back to Phil Mickelson, what he's done these last 2 years, and I keep going back to the Malice of the Palace. You remember that, of course?
Yes, I do.
In 2004. I mean, the Indiana Pacers were headed to the finals that year, and they'd come so close the season before. They were the most talented team in the NBA. They were 7-2 going into that game. And after that moment there, that horrible, horrible moment, it was over for the Pacers. I mean, players were suspended for seasons and for 30 games, and Reggie Miller was kind of headed towards that ring he was never able to get. You said you feel like Phil Mickelson will be forgiven here. How is he forgiven? How does he approach that if he wants to get back into the good graces of the PGA Tour and the PGA Tour players?
I think his sin, although obviously there's moral repercussions by engaging in sport washing with a murderous regime, obviously, but I think his sin really is going to be looked at more as trying to use leverage, trying to be the smart businessman, and overreaching. And I think that's forgivable. I mean, certainly, you say he was trying to burn the house down. I think he was trying to change the house. I don't think he was trying to actually start an alternate league. He was trying to get the PGA Tour to do things that he wanted. Okay, he was clumsy about it. He was wrong about it in terms of the actual facts. But he actually didn't do any damage to the PGA Tour. In fact, he probably strengthened it because there's more unity now. But I just think that Phil's natural gifts of charm, which has got him through a lot of things. I mean, we're talking about going way back to the Nike comments, you know, about the inferior equipment, all kinds of things that he may have miscalculated, but he kind of enjoyed being out there, being at the center of attention and trying an idea out. I just think he can be forgiven because he's also very good at contrition. He's very good at saying, I was wrong. And that goes a long way, too. And I just think Phil's so likable. And if he were to win again, that would be the American version of sport washing.
You know, it's more
if you win, all is forgiven. I think, you know, his record, what he's done in golf, will carry him through in many ways. He may look greedy, but he is a champion. He's won 6 majors. He's won all those tournaments. He was Tiger's best rival. Tiger has tremendous credibility right now with everything that he says. I think Phil can course correct and will be forgiven.
Eamon, how exhausted are the players from all these questions and having to be asked this week in, week out? Because we had an unbelievable performance at Riviera, one of the great golf courses on the PGA Tour, and we're opening the show with this because this is the conversation around the sport. Are the players exhausted by this? Are they done with all these questions?
I think they were exhausted with the subject. Now they're just angry at Phil's comments. And you can see that in the choice of words they use, because generally speaking, players do not speak harshly about each other in these terms. And Jaime's always been more forgiving as a personality than I am, but I don't think it's as easy with Phil this time. You don't congratulate the arsonist for giving the firefighters an opportunity to work on their skills. I think Phil was pretty devious in this sense. And the idea of whether or not he's forgiven also comes down to assuming that this is as bad as it's going to get, that there is not worse to come. There's an entire book that Alan Chipnook has been working on Phil Mickelson. Billy Walters is also working on a book which has an entire chapter on Phil Mickelson, Billy Walters having gone to prison for the insider trading case that Phil was associated with. So the idea that Phil has gotten over the worst of this might be a generous assumption.
I think it's some hypocrisy, though, if the players feel like Phil's the villain here, because in a sense, silently, they were cheering him on. Let's see where you can take this, Phil. You're our guy. You're our spokesman. We may not agree with everything, but you're really good at this, and maybe you're going to get us something. And let's face it, they got something from the PGA Tour in many ways, the PIP, all kinds of, you know, enhancements to prize money, all those things. So now to say, oh, you're evil and I'm separating myself from you, fine. You know, that's the course right now to look like unity for the PGA Tour. But I don't think it's actually sincere because first of all, I don't think Phil's hated among the players. I just think he's taking the fall right now, and they're kind of washing their hands of him.
Yeah, they've hated the statement. They've hated the approach, and that's what you're hearing from these players. Mm-hmm. Eamon, I can promise you this. If you're not already blocked by Phil Mickelson on Twitter, probably blocked at this point. We're going to get into some actual golf talk here and what we saw over the weekend at the Genesis. Joaquin Niemann, from Thursday to Sunday, he was the leader. He walked away with the trophy. We'll dive into his unbelievable performance next.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And WinGrips, the best grips in golf. And Bushnell Golf and the New Wingman, crank up your game. And by Cobra LTDX Drivers, engineered for the longest total distance.
Wire-to-wire win for Niemann, just 23 years of age. It got dicey there during the final round for a bit. Colin Morikawa made eagle at the 10th. But all in all, it was Niemann's to take home. You see that first wire-to-wire winner at the Genesis Invitational since Charlie Sifford back in 1969. Just the fourth to ever do it. Impressive from Joaquin Niemann. He talked to the media after the win.
I mean, this weekend I was just thinking about I want to win. I was decided on myself, and I had the confidence to say that because I was feeling great. I was hitting the ball great, and I think some tournaments before I didn't trust myself as much as I did this week, and I think that it was something that I had to work on it, and I think I did a great job this week, and I proved myself that I can have that confidence to be up here and to battle fights with the top players in the world. So that proved myself a big thing.
And Eamon, there is winning, and then there's wire-to-wire winning. That is something we do not see in professional golf much. You got to go back to the 2020 AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, the last player, Nick Taylor, to win wire-to-wire. And imagine this young man is 23 years old. Young players don't win at Riviera either. And I always contend that there are few golf tournaments that you see the current professional golfer get nervous at. This seems to be a place where you could get very, very nervous considering the golf course and the host of the event.
Sure, when Tiger's standing up at the top of the hill by the clubhouse there watching every shot, I think you're going to pay attention to him. Plus, you had the top 11 players in the world there last week, Shane. So it's not as though he was going up against a field that was in any way diluted. And it was interesting that everything that he has been doing well so far this season, he did a little bit better. For the season, he's seventh in strokes gained around the green. He was second at Riviera. He's eighth for the season in strokes gained tee to green. He was first at Riviera. And then in strokes gained approach, he's 20th this season, and he was first at Riviera. But what has really made a difference, I think, with him significantly is the putting. He started working with Stephen Sweeney on his putting 2 years ago, and I swapped messages with Sweeney this morning to ask what had changed, because when they started working together, Joaquin Niemann was 190th in strokes gained putting. And they worked a lot on basically on fundamentals. It was alignment, it was posture, kind of clearing away the work that had been done over the years with no great, you know, effect in his game. And now he's 26th in the field at Riviera. He's one of those guys whose ball striking is so good that he just has to be okay with a putter. And he was okay with a putter this week, and he could have won that tournament by an even wider margin.
Yeah, he's in that elite group, right? I mean, the players like Colin Morikawa and Victor Hovland and Justin Thomas, where when the putter shows up, they tend to be around the lead and possibly winning. I go back to the eighth hole on Sunday, because even when you go wire to wire, typically there are moments throughout 72 holes where things fall apart, if you will. And after that eagle we showed on Saturday, Niemann had gone 15 holes without a birdie, and he just made a bogey, and he was able to make birdie there at the eighth. And he even said in his post-round press conference, he said, that was huge for me to make the birdie at the eighth, knowing I had some birdie holes upcoming, knowing I had the 10th, knowing I had the 11th, so for potential to really run away with it. And, of course, he made eagle at the 11th. It was curtains for the rest of the field there, even if it got a little tighter late. But when you think about Niemann at just 23 years old, I mean, this is now the youngest multiple winner on the PGA Tour. I feel like this kid has major championship pedigree. I look at Open Championships and the way he can fly at the golf ball, and how does he not find himself in contention at St. Andrews later this year? He just seems like that type of player that's going to be consistently in the conversation at these places where you got to strike the ball around these golf courses.
And consistency is the next barrier for him to get through. He finished second three times on tour last year, the first two events in Hawaii and then the Rocket Mortgage in Detroit. Other than that, it was kind of feast or famine for Joaquin Niemann last year. There wasn't a lot of highs. He ended the year with a couple of missed cuts, but he hasn't been outside the top 10 so far this year. And if he does find that consistency on the bigger venues, he's proved he can beat the best fields in the world. Doing it now, obviously, in a quality PGA Tour event, doing it in major championships, that's the next step for him.
When we always talk about a fifth major, we go to the Players' Championship, which feels very fifth majory, right? But just off of that, it feels like this event is major level in terms of the field and the leaderboard and what these players are going for. I mean, each and every year now, Eamon, it's Riviera, it's Rory and JT and Colin Morikawa and John Rahm somewhere around the leaderboard. Victor Hovland seems to be near the top of each and every leaderboard. But this is one of those events that players feel like they need to win if they're going to complete their resume, PGA Tour resume. I mean, to pick this off at the age of 23, what a moment for Niemann. It feels a little bit like what we saw with Jordan Spieth at Augusta National, winning at the Masters at an early age. Young players don't win at Riviera much.
No, it's definitely a kind of course, and you hear a lot of players talk about how good this golf course is. That you heard it from Spieth and Justin Thomas last week on how it's one of the best courses they play all year long. But it's also a course that values experience. It's a little quirkier. Obviously, a 100-year-old golf course, a little quirkier than most of the courses these guys see on the PGA Tour every year. But to me, what was most impressive was his ability to get out in front, and then he was like Seabiscuit. There was no catching him at that point. He wasn't backpedaling, and there was every opportunity for him to backpedal because there were some seriously talented guys right behind him. And if you're the guy who's a little bit nervous on a Sunday morning starting out, the guys you don't want to see in the rearview mirror are guys like Victor Hovland, right, and Justin Thomas, or even Cameron Young, who was playing really well as well. So he had the opportunity to give it up, and the fact that he didn't, all he needed to do was shoot level par, and he did what he needed to do to win.
30 minutes into the show, we've had a Ron Artest comp, and now we've had a Seabiscuit comp. Why would you leave this program? Let's check out the Comcast Business Tour Top 10, where Niemann shakes out after the victory. Impressive stuff for the young man. Hideki's still leading, you see there, in top position. Niemann in seventh. Colin Morikawa moved up some spots to land in 10th. Important to kind of jump into the top 10 there as we get closer and closer to Augusta National. Well, there are a lot of winners in that top 10 coming up. We'll talk about guys who didn't win but still had excellent weeks. We already mentioned a couple of the names. Colin Morikawa going to make the list. Find out next. Of course, on Mondays, it's when we discuss winners that did not win. Eamon, I'll let you start. Who is your winner who didn't win this week?
It's kind of tempting to pick Jay Monahan for winning, but he didn't even hit a shot. But he probably had a better week than most guys out there. I got to go with Cameron Young. I mean, a year ago, he was 504th in the world rankings. Right now, he's on the very cusp of getting into the Masters. He's 53rd in the world. He shot 66-62 in the first two rounds on an iconic golf course against the best players in the world. And, you know, he finished second at the Sanderson Farms last fall. That's a noble tournament, but the field is nothing compared to what we saw at the Genesis Invitational. And he's got two second-place finishes in his rookie season. There's no way Cameron Young left Riviera feeling anything but buoyant about his game and his immediate future.
Cameron Young is a guy I picked to win the U.S. Open last year. You're telling me maybe pick him. This is the year. This could be the year.
But he's getting closer and closer. The odds are looking better every year.
There you go. There you go. I was a year off. My winner that didn't win is Ches Reavy. I mean, when you look at that leaderboard, you see names like Victor Hovland and Colin Morikawa and Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy. Ches Reavy finished
wow.
in the top 10 for the first time since the Fortinet Championship in September of 2020. That was his last top 10 on the PGA Tour. Interesting enough, in that tournament, he shot 66-66 on the weekend. He shoots 66-66 on the weekend here. But, you know, Ches Reavy was a guy that was ranked 36th in the world at the end of 2019, came into this week ranked 240th in the world. So he needs anything positive, anything to build on, to play that well for two consecutive days on the weekend after just making it into the weekend. Very, very big for your confidence. You mentioned what this tournament and what this week can do for players considering who you're going up against. And you're beating some of the best in the world when you finish in the top 10.
Yeah, and Chez just needs the tour to stay in California at this rate, if that's where his last two top 10s are. But sure, a guy like Chez Reavie and a guy like Cameron Young are going to take a lot from a week like this because of who they are sending that message to, who they hailed their own with and gave a very respectable account of themselves. It's the guys at the top of the world rankings who perhaps are a little more fickle in terms of what they take away from this. A guy like John Rahm, who finished well down the field, he's probably not going to be that happy because this was a week to put a statement on it, to, you know, just kind of put his foot on these guys, whereas it's Colin Morikawa, the number two ranked player in the world, who was sort of making more of a statement. Patrick Cantlay, another guy who finished way down, while the guy right in front of him, Victor Hovland, was right at the top. So it very much depends where you started the week in terms of what you take away from it emotionally in terms of confidence.
Talking Victor Hovland and talking John Rahm, we have Paige McKenzie coming up in just a moment to talk about both those players from a great week at Riviera, including a little Chipotle talk, a look at the official world golf rankings. Currently, Colin Morikawa had a chance to move into that number one position currently held by John Rahm. He did not. It's Rahm, it's Morikawa, it's Patrick Cantlay, and it's Victor Hovland at fourth in the world. It was an important Sunday for PGA Tour veteran Ben Ahn, who won the Korn Ferry Tour's Lecom Suncoast Classic for his first tour-sanctioned victory and first worldwide win since the 2015 BMW PGA Championship. He's going to try to Monday qualify into this week's Honda Classic. Always nice to be coming in playing well. And for more on that, it's time for Paige's Punctuations of the Week. We welcome in our good friend Paige McKenzie. And Paige, it's a holiday, it's a Monday, and you're going to start us off with an exclamation mark.
Oh, that's right. And actually, I want to go back to last week where I talked about the story of Ben Griffin. He gave up his professional golf dream, went to be a loan officer for a couple of months, and then has been playing extraordinarily well on the Korn Ferry Tour. Well, he did it again this week. You mentioned Ben on one. Well, he was one of a couple players sitting in second place. This is the second week in a row Ben Griffin has finished runner-up on the Korn Ferry Tour. What's interesting to me is back in 2019, he had eight starts on Korn Ferry Tour. In fact, he's had nine previous starts before this season. Never finished better than a tie for 57. But in the five starts that he's played so far this season, four of those have been in the top 12. He now sits second on the Korn Ferry Tour money list. Top 25 guys, of course, will graduate to the PGA Tour. So, and again, an exclamation point to a great week for a player that has renewed perspective for his love for the game.
Well, from the exclamation point to the asterisk, what is your asterisk of the week, Paige?
For me, it's the play of John Rahm on the last couple of Sundays. Almost nobody has been better than him. In fact, only three players have scored better than him on the last two Sundays, three at the WM Phoenix Open and zero at Riviera last week. The asterisk comes, though, in that he finished the tie for 10th and a tie for 21st. And it's very obvious where the deficiency has been. Obviously, Sunday performance good, but the rest of the week not up to his standard. And when you look at the strokes gained off the tee has been a strength of his. He is currently the number one player on the PGA Tour and did so those two previous weeks. But the putter is where it has been let down. Losing over half a stroke around in the last 2 weeks, which has brought his season average down, now sitting 86th on the PGA Tour, just barely above average. So the last 2 weeks have been a little bit of a struggle on the putting green for John Rahm.
T21, his worst finish of 2022. That, of course, is the world number one, if you will. What about the question mark of the week, Paige?
For me, we saw a rip of some of the great shots we've seen, but it's the short game of the players. So how did they do that? That is the question mark. How did these players make difficult shots look so easy? Going back to Saturday, Justin Thomas, one of the best in the game at using the bounce. See those soft elbows post-impact? That is what Justin Thomas is known for. He has such a soft delivery. And he did it again on Sunday on the 10th hole. Take a look at the elbows. So soft through impact, allowing the club head to release, hit softly on the ground, using the bounce of the club. That was excellent. But that was just one of many good shots that we saw. Colin Morikawa also on the 10th. Take a look at his belt buckle. Watch the rotation. Still able to rotate through on this short shot. A lot of folks at home, they get a little armsy. Colin Morikawa, that's how he did it, to answer the question. And Joaquin Niemann, watch his hands, just a little forward on the start and solid all the way through, keeping that club face square. That's how he did it. And finally, Cameron Young was not to be left out from this dunk brigade. Having very quiet hands and very rotational through impact. And a little rotation on the golf ball too. So how did he do it? Well, how did they do it, I should say. It's a little advice for the folks at home.
Well, Paige, there were a lot of explosive quotes in the game of golf this week. We could use some that were maybe a little more lighthearted. What was your favorite one you heard last week?
For me, it was very easy, and it was from Victor Hovland. And a lot of people measure their wealth or how their finances are going by the car they drive or the house that they buy. Victor Hovland, he measures it by a different standard.
Okay, I knew I had some security when I first turned pro. I didn't have to count every single dollar that I spend on air travel and food. So that was like a big thing, you know. Instead of not getting guac at Chipotle, I could, you know, could get double meat and some extra Chipotle, and I don't have to worry about it. So it's just stuff like that on a daily basis. Like, you don't have to think about it. If you think a certain thing is good for your game or good for your health or whatever it is, then you go do it. You don't have to worry about, you know, how much it's going to cost. So that was about it.
That's the kind of stress relieving financial security that I'm talking about. I can relate, Victor Hovland. I too like double meat on the Chipotle, and I appreciate that now you feel secure enough where you don't have to worry about it.
No mention of private planes, no mention of nice cars, just Chipotle. And I'm going to let people in on a little hint here. If you ever want to see a professional golfer in the flesh, go to the local Chipotle at the PGA Tour stop. You'll see two or three. I can guarantee you that.
You're taking all the glamour out of it here, Shane.
That's just telling you, Paige. We always appreciate the time. Now I'm hungry for Chipotle. Well, don't go anywhere, because still to come, we're joined by 72. Is that a typo? 72? Time LPGA Tour winner Annika Sorenstam. She's going to join us in just a bit.
Well, it's been 14 years since Annika Sorenstam played a major championship, but this summer she's going to do it again at age 51. Maybe there's a comeback for you too, Shane. We're going to visit with a 72-time LPGA Tour winner to find out why she's teeing it up at the US Women's Open. And Annika was still competing when this guy first began winning on the PGA Tour Champions. And all these years later, he's still going. Bernhard Langer, the Energizer Bunny of the geriatric set, just won his 43rd title at age 64. We're going to debate whether or not Phil Irwin needs to start getting nervous about his all-time wins record. And as the PGA Tour heads east, we'll review the scorecard for the West Coast. Hour two of Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
You know what, Eamon? I was playing golf last week at Bandon Dunes, and I know you mentioned the comeback story. No, it's not there anymore. I've just lost it. I've just lost the game around the greens. That's what goes when you don't practice. But I hit shots now. I see a shot in my brain, much like a Justin Thomas does. and then I hit the shot like you do.
See, I see shots in my nightmares at this point, Shane. That's why
I understand that.
That's why my wine consumption has increased while my golf consumption has decreased.
Well, let's get a check on this date in golf history. We're going to take you back to 2006. The Rolex Women's World Golf Rankings made its debut with Annika Sörenstam as the number one player in women's golf. Annika's career record at the U.S. Women's Open, 15 starts, 3 victories, 95, 96 at Pine Needles, 06, couple runner-up finishes, 7 top 10s as well. Very impressive stuff from one of the greatest to ever do it. And she made headlines last week when she filed an entry as a fully exempt player for the U.S. Women's Open hosted in early June at Pine Needles, of course, a place that Annika has plenty of success throughout her career back in 96. It was Sörenstam going back-to-back at the U.S. Open with a 6-shot victory. Count it, 6 at Pine Needles. And, of course, Annika Sörenstam, I mean, we were joking about 72 career victories on the LPGA Tour. I'm not sure she gets enough credit when we talk about these great, great athletes. I mean, we talk so much about this generation of the Roger Federers and the Serena Williams and LeBron James and the Tom Brady's, and we need to give Annika Sörenstam her credit as well.
And it was a tremendous pace at which Annika won as well, because, you know, it has been 14 years since Annika walked away from the game to have a family. So she racked up those wins. And her first LPGA Tour win was the U.S. Open in 1995. So she racked up those wins at a heck of a pace. And obviously she played Colonial on the PGA Tour as well. But she walked away from the game with absolutely nothing left to prove. And that's what makes it to me so interesting that she comes back with nothing to prove as well. There can't be a hole in the resume that Annika thinks needs to be filled at this point.
What she did last year at the U.S. Senior Women's Open at Brooklawn, I mean, the way she went out there and was dominant, I mean, we expected her to get in the conversation in that tournament, but to go out there and win the championship in the fashion that she did reminded us of what we'd seen earlier in her career. And I feel like this is the type of player, I mean, competitiveness does a lot for certain players. I mean, you think about Bernhard Langer, who we're going to talk about in a bit, what he did again on the Champions Tour. This is a player that gets to Augusta National and expects to make the cut and expects to finish in the top 20. Annika's a player, I feel like, that expects to get herself in the conversation at a U.S. Women's Open. Not a Senior Women's Open, but a U.S. Women's Open as well.
Yeah, I don't think Annika's showing up to be ceremonial or to just make up the numbers. She's still competitive. She's still Annika Sörenstam. And that's what would make it all the more interesting if she did put herself in the mix by Sunday, because you have all of these younger, hungrier players who are out there trying to make a statement. But if they're looking around on Sunday afternoon on the leaderboard and they see Annika Sörenstam's name there, that's going to give them something to think about.
Already committed to the Senior LPGA Championship this year. We see Annika Sörenstam play in a lot of the celebrity events out there competing with the likes of athletes, ex-athletes, if you will, that are now taking golf very, very seriously. And those events are extremely competitive. This is a player that has continued to grind. This is a player that goes out there finding ways to play. Certain players hang it up when they get done with their careers, and certain players just can't step away from the game because it's in their blood.
Can you imagine being one of the celebrities who think you've got a chance to win the celebrity division, and then you look down the entry list and you see one of the greatest players of all time in your division, and you're suddenly thinking, hang, I want to file a complaint here. Annika does not belong in the celebrity division. She belongs in the actual competitor division.
Yeah, what does she feel over a 10-footer versus maybe a Jay Feely feels over a 10-footer? I'm assuming a little bit different mentally, but it's exciting to see her back at Pine Needles. I mean, this was one of the great performances in U.S. Women's Open in history, to go back to back in this championship and to win it by 6 shots on a golf course that is very, very demanding and can test all parts of your game. And frankly, I'd say is an underrated major championship venue. When we get back to North Carolina at Pine Needles, you get to see a golf course push the players much like Riviera pushes the men on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and Pine Needles has undergone a restoration since then. It's still one of the greatest golf courses in the country. It doesn't get the attention it deserves simply because of Pinehurst number 2 a couple of miles down the road. But this is a nice way for Annika to tie a bow on her U.S. Women's Open career, because this was one of her, it was her second start in the U.S. Women's Open. It was her second win. And that's assuming, of course, that she intends to tie a bow on it, that there is not actually more if she gets the hunger back again, because who knows, if she puts up a good showing, why would Annika walk away again?
When you think about some of the venues upcoming for the U.S. Women's Open, some of the great, great venues in our sport, Pebble Beach coming up, Erin Hills coming up, and you've got Riviera coming up, you know, maybe we'll see her start a few more times. You know what we should do? We'll ask her about that. She joins us now, the Hall of Famer, and Pine Needles, the U.S. Women's Open. It almost made too much sense for you to make this a big of a comeback story, Annika.
Well, hello, everybody. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I mean, what an opportunity. I'm certainly very thankful from the USGA to give me an invite to go play. As you know, the US Open, the Women's Open, has always had a special heart in my career. Literally, that's where my career started, right? In 1995, Colorado Springs, my first victory on the LPGA.
So, Amika, I'm curious what your motivation is, because is this to prove something to the kids? Because you don't have anything else to prove to somebody else. What is driving you to go back again?
Well, this is really all about everything but me, really. It's number one is the family. It's number two is my partner. Number three is literally just, you know, representing the game and giving back to the young girls out there, trying to inspire people that want to play. You know, I was a friend of Peggy Kirkbell. You know, she hosted this tournament in 1996, where it was my second championship or major. So I would say it's not really about necessarily comeback. I've said that before, but just being part of the game, having my foot in the game and trying to inspire as many people as possible. And obviously I'm very thankful for the invite. I mean, you know, I think, you know, I wouldn't have done this if I wouldn't have received it from winning the U.S. Women's Seniors. So I would say it's not about my game necessarily anymore, but of course I'm excited. Great memories from there and just want to continue to grow the game of golf, especially for women around the world.
Have the practice round texts began yet? Have you started to get the text from some of these young players going, I want to play with the Hall of Famer?
Yeah, it started, which is really fun. You know, I appreciate it very much. And, you know, it's going to be fun. I mean, that course, as you know, I mean, just Pinehurst in general, what a golf mecca to come back there. They've been so supportive of women's golf. And so super excited about that. I have a few months to practice, which is what I need. But again, this is really the journey to kind of continue to defend my title at the Senior Women's Open later in the summer.
Now, Amika, 30 years ago, Joanne Carner finished runner-up in a major at the LPGA Championship. Now, admittedly, it was the mortals division since Betsy King won by 11 that week. But she was 53 years old at the time. Do you believe that you can put yourself into the mix at Pine Needles this summer?
You know, I have no idea. I mean, as you know, I've played in a few events. Just recently here at the Hilton Grand Vacations, it was my home course. I played a celebrity, but I played alongside the very best. And, you know, my goal is not to prove anything like that. I'm super impressed with the young talent out there, how well they're doing. You know, for me, it's going out there, do my best, prepare, and hopefully inspire others to just kind of, you know, follow their dreams. So, you know, we'll see what it takes to go out there. I can only play the game I have today. You know, I'm 51. You know, I'm not where I was when, you know, I was at the number one in the world. But, you know, I'm going to do the best, play from A to B. You know, I love that golf course. So, you know, anything can happen. But like I said, it's more about everything around it necessarily than just focus on this is what I want to achieve at the age of 51. So I'm really excited about that opportunity.
We spend so much time at this desk praising the LPGA Tour, specifically 2021. It felt like a big year on the LPGA Tour. When you look at the LPGA Tour currently, which young star do you see yourself the most in?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I see a lot of great young stars. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I love the international flavor. And obviously, it's nice to see Lydia Ko playing so well. She's, you know, a member here at Lake Nona. I see her literally every single day. You know, I'm super impressed with the Korda sisters. I mean, Nelly especially, the way she's playing. I mean, there's so many great players from South Korea that I admire in a lot of ways. So, you know, I think the LPGA, first of all, I mean, it's in a great place. I mean, you got Brooke Henderson from Canada and Yutanago sisters and you name it. It's just, I think it's a fun time for the LPGA. And I think Mike Wan has done an excellent job, you know, just putting the players up there, playing great courses. Amazing to see that the purse for the U.S. Open is going to go up, you know, playing Pebble Beach next year. I think there's so much momentum on the LPGA and the players. I think they really worked hard to earn that. So, you know, as far as myself seeing one of them, it's hard to pick out, maybe a little bit here and a little bit there, but I think the LPGA is in good shape today.
You mentioned having won the U.S. Women's Senior Open last year. You're already committed to the Senior LPGA Championship this year. You're also playing some pro celebrity events. Did you miss the competition when you were away from it?
I mean, you almost miss a little bit. I mean, I grew up competing, whether it was in tennis or whether it was in soccer, and then, of course, golf. And, you know, there was a part of me that when I stepped away that, you know, missed that. But, you know, getting married, starting a family, and the Annika brand of business has kept me really, really busy. I really wasn't planning on coming back until, I would say, you know, COVID hit, and you start thinking about what's important in life. And, you know, it's family. Our son is really into golf, and so I practice a lot with him. And then I turned 50, and I realized, well, maybe I should support, you know, some of these events that's out there because they're giving us a platform to continue with what we love. So, but, you know, having said that, I mean, this is this year, maybe it's going to be 7 or 8 events. You know, I'm excited to be able to join my partners in these events in different places around the world. And, you know, that's about it. But it's been a fine balance. It's been fun to get back. And, of course, you know, hanging with some of these young players again, it kind of gives you energy and a little fish back into my career.
Annika, I was kind of joking a bit about the practice round text messages you're going to receive from young players, but you are going to have young players coming up to you and asking you for advice. What's the key piece of advice you give to young players when they ask you how to navigate professional golf?
Yeah, no, I mean, I love to share my stories and my knowledge and certainly my passion. I mean, a lot of the questions, I mean, you know, I do that through Annika Foundation, and, you know, a lot of it is about, you know, practice rounds, as you mentioned, you know, how to prepare for tournaments, how do you work with caddies, how do you deal with sponsors, you know, how do you plan your schedule? I mean, it varies from player to player, but it, you know, I tell them these are just my experiences, and, you know, just you got to learn, but you also got to try. And I mean, we all make mistakes along the way. We all know that this is not going to be a straight journey. It's going to be more, you know, bumps along the way, but, you know, take one thing at a time and learn from your mistakes. I mean, I've made mistakes in my life, but I think the best thing you can is just to bounce back and not do them again. So, you know, I look forward to that, you know, to the mentoring role I always have. And if I can help anybody, a young girl, a young boy, to achieve their dreams, then, you know, thumbs up for that.
There are certain things that just make sense in the game. Jack Nicklaus walking the second nine at Augusta National. Annika Sorenstam playing in a U.S. Open at Pine Needles. We appreciate the time. We look forward to it this summer.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Take care, guys.
That, the 72-time winner on the LPGA Tour. And this one man does not age. He doesn't age. He just wins and wins and wins and wins. Bernard Langer won again. We're going to talk about his weekend and how close he is to 45 on the Champs Tour.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And Zexio. Experience light, experience easy. Zexio, experience the difference. And Geico. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. And by Epson Tour, road to the LPGA.
Bernard Langer is going to be a big part of these highlights. He won again.
Yeah, and you think you're going to end up with 72 wins like Annika, except on the PGA Tour Champions.
He's chasing Hale Irwin's number. You keep thinking this guy's going to go away, and then he shows up and he wins and he's in great shape and he hits shots like that. Just a complete player, if there ever was one. You know, we were talking just in the last segment about Sorenstam coming out as world number one when the Rolex rankings were revealed. The first time the men's rankings were revealed, that guy was world number one.
And he might still rank pretty high if he was playing regular golf at this stage. One birdie putt after another.
And approach shots like this one, just dialed. Nobody works harder. You hear that statement a lot, but this one actually might ring true. On the range, practice rounds. The reason he wins is not for what he does on Thursday or Friday or Saturday. It's typically what he does on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. Another victory for the man that simply will not age. Defeating Father Time. Shot 16 under. 1 by 3. What a week. What a win. Chasing a little history. And he knows it's right there at his grasp.
Incredible performance driving. You hit 39 of 42 fairways. Can you look back and think, okay, that's the best week I've ever had driving the golf ball?
Certainly in the top three of driving, yeah. And that's very important around here. There's so much trouble left and right. And it's great to have Terry back, my caddy. And I have my family with me, my two grandsons, my two daughters. So we had a blast. This is almost like a home game for me, just living 2 hours east of here.
Well, it's certainly one of your goals at the top of the year, always is Schwab Cup, coming off that victory there. And now you move second in Schwab Cup. How important is it to you to actually try to defend that title there?
Well, the Schwab Cup is the number one carrot for all of us. You know, we're all trying to win it. It means you had a great year if you can. And it's not going to be easy, I understand. There's a lot of young guns coming out. But I'm, you know, going to give it my best and see where we come up at the end of the year.
Okay, I don't need the generic answer right here. 43 wins, you're two off hell. It's got to be in the front of your mind, not in the back of your mind, in the front of your mind, is it?
Yeah, more and more, so I'm coming after you, Hale.
There you go. Coming for him. 45 is the number. 43 is his number. It's not if he reaches it, Amon. It's when he reaches it, considering what he's able to do, not just this year and last year, but throughout his career on PGA Tour Champions.
Sure, well, if you open the tournament as he did this week by shooting your age, it's kind of setting a statement right out there for guys right off the get-go. And what's interesting is he's turned pro 50 years ago in 1972. 50. He was a professional before some guys who were in the field at the Chubb Classic were even born. Shane, and that, there's another testament to his longevity that I just find remarkable in terms of his the timeline of his career. He played the 1976 Open Championship at Birkdale. That was the last Open Championship played by Gene Sarazen, who was born in 1902. He also played the Masters 2 years ago with Abel Gallegos, who was born in 2002. There's a century's worth of golfers that Bernhard Langer has played with and beaten. There is no greater example in this game of longevity than this guy. And he mentioned having his kids and grandkids there. He's probably going to be winning in front of his great-grandkids.
Well, he's won 119 times. 119 times. I always go back to the Brooks Koepka quote about you win 5% of the time and you're in the Hall of Fame. And think about that. Think about how often he has finished a round on Sunday, and he's had to stay around because they give you a trophy if you win. 119 times that has happened. We praise players for their consistency, and we praise players for their longevity, and we did that last year with Phil Mickelson, and he'd been the last player to win on the PGA Tour as an amateur and now the oldest major winner ever. This is the guy, though. This is the gold standard for finding a way to keep your body in shape and your game in shape and somehow the mind in the shape that you want and need it to. If you talk to 48 and 49-year-old players as they prepare for PGA Tour Champions, mm-hmm. they talk a lot about the process of getting back into grind mode, getting back into the mode of going to the driving range and simply working on your game, because as you get older and you've been doing this for 20, 25, even 30 years, it can feel like that grind, right? It can feel like the grind that everybody talks about. To get back to that mode, I mean, this guy has been doing it, to your point, for so long that the 100 years between players in major championship fields. And this is also a guy, Amon, that last year told us he feels like he could be a benefit on a Ryder Cup team for the Europeans. And he feels like he can get himself in contention at another Masters. And we'll see him at Augusta National again in 2022. This is a guy that doesn't just speak because he wants to speak and he wants to have a quote out there. This is a guy that truly believes in those things.
I'm starting to wonder if he's cryogenically frozen at this point.
It's like Demolition Man.
But, you know, there was the famous story about Langer many years ago where he asked his caddy, who had just given him a yardage, if he was measuring it from the front of the sprinkler head or the back of the sprinkler head. That's exactly why Bernhard Langer is doing what he's doing now, because no T and no I goes uncrossed or undotted with this game. He does not leave anything to chance, and the work ethic has never diminished in those 50 years.
I said it's not if, it's when he gets to 45. He mentioned it in that interview. I'm coming for you. I mean, PointsBet is putting this at virtually even money, not for Langer to get to 45 wins, but to get to 45 wins in 2022. Our friends at PointsBet wouldn't even give a number for him to eventually pass Irwin at 45 wins, because we know it's going to happen.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder if Hale Irwin's going to want to try to make a comeback himself and try to notch one ahead of him. But there's literally nobody else in this stratosphere with these two guys. You saw the third guy on that list there with Lee Trevino, who had, at the time, the greatest senior tour career of all time with 29 wins. And this is kind of like this generation of, you know, Federer, Nadal, Djokovic. These two have just kind of separated themselves from everyone else.
You've been very, very impressive, of course, on PGA Tour Champions. He is headed for history. And we've had a little bit of history on the West Coast swing. It concluded Sunday at Riviera. We're headed to Florida. But before we take the flight east, we're going to chat about some things we loved from the West Coast swing. A little West Coast love coming up after the break. Wrapped up the West Coast swing on Sunday. It's time now for the takeaway as we get set for Florida. We figure we pay off the West Coast to start. And Paige McKenzie back joining us. Paige, what was your big takeaway from the West Coast swing?
For me, it was that Colin Morikawa is seemingly growing more dangerous by the day. And what I mean is, Last year, the narrative was Colin Morikawa is an unbelievable ball striker. If he could just become an average putter, he would win even more. Well, that narrative for this season seems to be coming true. In fact, if you look at some of his best events, his highest strokes gained putting, two of his highest six have come in this season. Now, it's a small sample size. In fact, it only is three events, but consider that two of those three are two of his highest ever. And when you compare it to what he did last season, only four times over the course of the entire season, I'm meaning measured events, there was 18 measured events, four times was he even positive strokes gained. So far this season, all three of the events that he's played in, he was positive strokes gained putting. That puts him on the fourth on the PGA Tour so far this season in strokes gained putting. So the number two player in the world not only has strength of ball striking, but now a strength of putter. It's a trend that I'm going to be keeping my eye on, but that was my big takeaway for this West Coast swing.
That's right, Paige. And he was actually strokes gained positive with a putter all four rounds at Genesis as well. And to this point about these great young talents playing around their weaknesses, I look at Victor Hovland in this scenario. In his last seven starts, Victor Hovland has had three wins, and five of those seven starts have been top 10 finishes. But he does it by playing around his short game. Victor Hovland is statistically the worst short game player on the PGA Tour. His strokes gained around the green, he ranks 216th, dead last. He's never actually been better than 124th in any season that he's played in what is still a young career. And, you know, he joked a couple of years ago when he said, my chipping sucks. Well, the statistics would tell you it does. The results would actually tell you it probably doesn't matter that much because he's so good in every other component of the game that he's winning at quite a rapid clip despite having a short game that is really not up to much.
Both his DP World Tour wins, negative strokes gained around the greens for Victor Hovland. That speaks so much to the incredible ball strike. And, you know, my takeaway for this West Coast swing is the same as it is every year. It's my favorite time of the year to watch golf, considering it's prime time. The courses are always amazing. The events seem to be amazing. It's the start of the year. There's a little bit of shuffling in terms of clubs and sponsorships and something looking different with the players. But just getting back into the mode, you know, football starts to slowly go away and you get Pebble Beach and you get Riviera and you get Torrey Pines and you get Scottsdale. To me, it is just my favorite time to watch golf. And, of course, there are moments and there are events where I'm into it as well. But for a stretch of golf, I don't think anything beats the West Coast.
No, and you're getting a lot of first-time winners this time around as well. We had Tom Hoagie, but Scottie Scheffler is the one that I look at as the first-time winner from this West Coast stretch that we're going to be hearing a lot more from, probably even this season, much less in the years to come.
So we go from the West Coast to Florida and taking a look at the Florida swing and the upcoming schedule on the PGA Tour. You got the Honda Classic, you got the Arnold Palmer Invitational, we got the Players Championship. We'll be down there in Florida. I'm bringing my clubs. You taking your clubs?
Absolutely.
Okay, that a boy. And the Valspar Championship wraps up the Florida swing. So what do you want to see, Eamon, from the Florida swing? What kind of stands out for something you'd like to see across those four events?
I want to see tears. I want to see whining and moaning. To me, the Florida swing is where we get into the meat grinder stuff. We've seen record scores on the West Coast, even at Riviera, the way Joaquin Niemann tore that course up. They aren't going to happen at PGA Nashville. If you look at the actual, in the last five seasons, the typical winning score in the West Coast swing is 17 under par. It's 11 under par on the Florida swing because the course of PGA National is pretty difficult. Bay Hill tends to play pretty difficult. Innisbrook is no pushover and Sawgrass is Sawgrass. And that's really what I want to see is you get in here. I know this whole kind of bear trap thing is overplayed at PGA National, but the golf course is a meat grinder. It's like paying $400 to get mugged. And I can't wait to see these guys get mugged.
You want to get beat up? Yeah, pay me $400.
No, I just want to watch somebody
we'll
else
make that
do,
happen.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see the superstars start to win. And this is no takeaway from Scottie Scheffler and Hideki Matsuyama, who already have victories in 2022. But you guys just mentioned a couple of the youngsters that are getting close to victory but not quite taking home the trophy. A Colin Morikawa, a Victor Hovland, a Rory McIlroy. These guys are playing good golf. I want to see a couple of trophies for those top names because we're not far away from the Players and we're definitely not far away from Augusta National. And we just need to see a couple of those players kind of push themselves away from that group of the top 10, 12, 15 youngsters that are dominating the PGA Tour and walk away with a little bit of hardware.
And a lot of those big guys live close enough to PGA National where they're likely to run into their colleagues in the Chipotle, but they're not actually in the field
extra
this
guac?
Week. You know, you know, Brooks Koepka is pretty much one of the rare guys who lives in that area who is teeing it up this week. And I think part of that is something has to give in the schedule when you're coming off an event like Phoenix and Riviera, and then you're heading into events like Bay Hill and the Players. There has to be a gap in there somewhere that guys take off. But I also think it speaks to the difficulty of the golf course, and guys do not want to get slapped around as much as PGA National will do that to some guys who are just a little bit off.
It can do a lot for you. I mean, you look at the winners last year on the Florida Swing back in 2021 and some notable names, if you will. Matt Jones won the Honda Classic, just one top 10 finish worldwide since that victory. Bryson was the story on the PGA Tour to start the year, of course, winning an API. No wins since, dropped from number 6 in the world to number 12 in the world. Then, of course, Justin Thomas, who he himself talked about his 2021, the lone bright spot, of course, at the Players' Championship. No wins since, and he's dropped from number 2 in the world to number 7 in the world. We have seen JT pop up on these leaderboards, and it seems like Justin Thomas's game is getting back to where Justin Thomas wants it. But, of course, with JT, it always typically comes down to the putter.
It is, and he's spending a lot of time working on that these days. But he was top 20 in the field in putting at the Genesis, which doesn't happen that often with him these days. So maybe he's actually turned that corner a little bit, feels a little bit more confident in what he's doing. But when you look at that list of winners last year in Florida, I sense he's a lot closer to winning again than Bryson DeChambeau is, who's both healthy and apparently only a begrudging member of the PGA Tour based on a statement yesterday.
Let's see the guys show up in Florida. That is the hope. It has been a great 2022 to this point.